Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to a very special edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, and a brief special commemoration at the end of today's podcast. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Jim, we also want to let folks know that everything today is sponsored by Dollar Shave Club. Right now, for just $5, you can get the razor, you can get the shave butter, you can get the trial-sized versions of Dollar Shave Club's most popular products and their new starter set, and you can get it at dollarshaveclub.com/martini. More on that a little bit later in the podcast. And Jim, the good news today focuses on the fact that it looks like Americans will have a pretty good chance to hear all about the new Russia scandal, or as some people like to say, the real Russia scandal that was our bad martini a couple of days ago. This is courtesy of Sarah Carter over at Circa News. Senate Judiciary Chairman Charles Grassley asked the attorney of a former FBI informant Wednesday to allow her client to testify before his committee regarding the FBI's investigation regarding kickbacks and bribery by the Russian state-controlled nuclear company that was approved to purchase 20% of United States uranium supply in 2010. In a formal letter, Grassley asked Victoria Tunsing, the lawyer representing the former FBI informant, to allow her client, who says he worked as a voluntary informant for the FBI, to be allowed to testify about the crucial eyewitness testimony he provided to the FBI regarding members of the Russian subsidiary and other connected players from 2009 until the FBI's prosecution of the defendants in 2014. Tunsing's client was an American businessman who says he worked for 4 years undercover as an FBI confidential witness. Tunsing says he was blocked by the Obama Justice Department under then-Attorney General Loretta Lynch about testifying to Congress about his time as an informant for the FBI. He contends that he has pertinent information that the Russians were attempting to gain access to former President Bill Clinton and his wife, then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, to influence the Obama administration's decision on the purchase of Uranium One. So, Jim, a lot of questions here. Why, if the prosecutions happened in 2014, couldn't this witness come forward more recently than now? And what do you make of the fact that Loretta Lynch tried to quash this? A lot of unanswered questions, but looks like we're going to get some sunlight here.
Well, I can come up with a very cynical explanation, Greg. I mean, it's if you don't believe in the good and noble and honorable nature of folks like Loretta Lynch and Eric Holder and the entire Justice Department under the Obama administration and the Clintons, you probably would say, oh, okay, well, this is what we've come to expect from the Clintons. Like, the government was simply not interested in reviewing anything that looked all that shady or corrupt or some sort of improper influence on that. By the way, I would also point out, if this points to bribery, kickbacks, corruption in the U.S. nuclear industry and all the people who are, supply the all the various parts and materials for the U.S. nuclear industry, okay, right? This is okay. You'd think the left might be interested in going after some good old-fashioned corporate corruption, but apparently not. Apparently, this is, you know, we're all going to avert our eyes and talk about what the president said about to grieving families of servicemen or something like that. There's been an astounding lack of interest in what should be a giant, you know, this could very well be Enron. This could very well be a giant corporate scandal as well as a government scandal. But because it's, you know, the Clintons are in the periphery of the potential targets here, all of a sudden it's a, you can just picture the conversations in the newsrooms, Greg. It's complicated and messy. And it's back in the, you know, early to mid 90s, the Whitewater dealings of the Clintons were described as this obscure land deal that nobody could really follow or understand. Look, if you're in politics, particularly local politics, one of your realms of authority is zoning laws, right? And, you know, can you use this land for this? Can you use this land for that? So if it's somebody you don't like, media will go after this person and investigate it and explain it and demonstrate, aha, this may seem obscure, but in the end, this is doing a favor for someone in exchange for money. But as soon as it's somebody you like, you know, it's complicated and obscure, and who can keep track of all these regulations and all that kind of stuff. So my suspicion is there'll be quite a few places that we've got the at least the allegations of a giant and consequential scandal that the media will once again find, oh, God, this stuff is just so complicated. there's no way we can put this on the front page.
Just like the Bob Menendez trial, just like the Imran Awan scandal. It's just amazing just how many of the Democratic scandals that just have too many layers for us to really be able to dig through.
Other than the hot-looking women who are provided in the resort, it's not a visual story, so that's why television isn't covering the Bob Menendez scandal.
Amazing. One quick follow-up here. You got a lot of folks now who haven't been real thrilled with the Mueller investigation already, saying, how can Bob Mueller stay on this case since he was FBI director till 2013 when all this was going on and he was part of keeping it under wraps? Any legitimacy to that, or is that just fishing?
Among many things in Washington, it emits an odor. It's not just that we need to drain a swamp. It's that everything in the swamp stinks. It's not that you have a lot of like really pleasant smelling swamps, but every time you find one allegation of wrongdoing, it does feel like it's connected to three or three more. So we'll see.
All right, Jim, let's move to our bad martini, but we're still not leaving the Obama years. Let's go over to Fox News and the Daily Caller for bringing this to our attention. Brett Baer, the host of Special Report on Fox News, interviewing the chairman of the House Oversight Committee earlier this week. That's Trey Gowdy of South Carolina. They covered a lot of different ground on a lot of different investigations. But one of the things that Fox News and other outlets have reported recently is the depth of the unmasking that the Obama administration did in the final year, which, of course, happened to coincide with the presidential campaign. And it recently came to light that UN Ambassador Samantha Power made approximately 260 unmasking requests, a rate of one per business day in her final year in office. But Trey Gowdy, in speaking with Brett Baer, offered a whole new wrinkle, assuming Samantha Power is actually telling the truth here.
If she were on your show, she would say those requests to unmask may have been attributed to her, but they greatly exceed by an exponential factor the request she actually made. So that's her testimony, and she was pretty emphatic in it. The surveillance community, the intelligence community has assigned this number of requests to her. Her perspective, her testimony is, they may be under my name, but I did not make those requests.
So, Jim, the plot thickens here. Either Samantha Power's a big fat liar, but Trey Gowdy doesn't certainly seem to think so, or people were exactly doing that, putting out unmasking requests in her name, which makes the stink of this particular issue get much, much stenchier.
Yeah. Sorry. The moment this came up, there were a lot of people who said, wait, this doesn't make sense. Why would the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations be making all these unmasking requests? How much intelligence would she really need? And particularly, surveillance of communications with U.S. figures and particularly anyone connected with the Trump campaign. It just didn't make sense. That was kind of fun, was to watch some folks kind of reflexively say, oh, yes, it does. It's totally normal for the UN ambassador to need all this kind of sensitive information. Really? Susan Rice, you could understand. Anybody else who is much more involved in, the traditional national security apparatus. Okay, that makes a little more sense. So if this explanation from her, is she telling the truth? We don't know for certain. If she is not telling the truth, well then, by golly, she just committed perjury and we should prosecute her to the fullest extent of the law. But her defense sort of makes sense, that she really wouldn't have any good reason to do this. And if she were, like, you just kind of figure she would need a good explanation for why she was constantly asking for this information. So now the real question is, okay, so who really was? Who would have access to, whatever password or security code or whatever measures there are to ensure that only the proper officials are making these sorts of unmasking requests? Greg, I'm trying to remember, has Susan Rice ever said anything that wasn't true? Or wasn't that turned out to not be honest? Oh, that's right. Benghazi was a protest, and Bo Bergdahl served with honor and distinction and stuff like that. So I don't know for certain that Susan Rice did. I just know that at least twice Susan Rice has been caught with her hand in the cookie jar and then insisted to us that, no, that's I'm not peeing on your leg. It's just rain. So I can't say with absolute certainty, but that's where my cynical, suspicious mind would turn to first. But who knows? Maybe somebody else in the administration was doing this. I think this is very much worth investigating. If you're concerned about classified information being released and things like that, well then, by golly, you should be worried about people getting access to information that they're not supposed to. Certainly someone impersonating Samantha Powers certainly sounds like some skullduggery or some, something sinister is at work here. And then just the general sense of, if you're concerned about the surveillance state, right? If you were upset about what the NSA was doing and all the Snowden revelations, well, then people starting to snoop around in intelligence intercepts that include American citizens for no good reason, well, then this is exactly the sort of abuse of these intelligence capabilities that people warned about. So I just have a hard time seeing how anybody could kind of, you know, brush this off or shrug or, once again, not treat this as a big story, because it seems like it is and it should be. It's enough to make me just, you know, I get, Greg, I get tired about this. I get exasperated, exhausted, and I just look haggard, and eventually I need a shave.
Yeah, exactly. Something definitely stinks about this story, but it doesn't mean we have to. By now, everyone knows that Dollar Shave Club ships amazing razors for just a few bucks. But as we have been members of the Dollar Shave Club for a while now, and we love our shave, what we didn't know, and you might not until you hear us talk about it right now, is that the Dollar Shave Club also has products for pretty much everything else you're going to need in the bathroom. Body wash, shampoo, hair gel, lip balm, everything. What else do you need? I mean, for guys, it's maybe the list isn't even that long. But as soon as I heard about the Dollar Shave Club, I knew that these quality products would be great, because I know how good the razors are, and I know you'll be sold as well.
Now, I observed in the past that if you go to the store, there are too many options, and you can't tell the difference between any of them. Well, I was just at the store this morning, and I was shopping for unrelated hygiene products, and I kind of walked by, and I see, oh, here's all the shaving stuff. You're looking at it, you're like, well, okay, this is a very sleek black package, but I don't know if any of them are really any good. And once again, you know, it's not like the average CVS clerk is shaving using every particular product and can tell you, oh, I really like this one, this one works well. Look, you know, the people who work at convenience stores are not generally experts on shaving and hygiene products. So Dollar Shave Club makes it easy and convenient for you to upgrade your shave and your bathroom, because you don't have to set foot in a store to get a high-quality shave and grooming products. They will deliver them right to your door. Just like their razors, everything is super high quality, and it left me looking and feeling amazing. From premium ingredients to sophisticated scents, Dollar Shave Club is changing the game.
So if you're like Jim and me and you're just sick of the nonsense at the store, now's the time to try out Dollar Shave Club. Because for a limited time, Dollar Shave Club is basically giving away their starter set to new members. For only $5, this starter set features their executive razor and 3 trial-sized versions of their most popular products that help you stay fresh and clean. In your first box, you will receive the shave butter, body wash, and yes, the One Wipe Charlie's butt wipes. You will also receive their executive razor, which includes their premium weighty handle and a full cassette of cartridges. After that first box, replacement cartridges are sent for only a few bucks a month. This offer is exclusively available at dollarshaveclub.com/martini. That's dollarshaveclub.com/martini. Dollar Shave Club's high-quality products will have you covered from face cheeks to the other cheeks, and there's no better time to try the club. dollarshaveclub.com/martini. Jim, we live in a 24-hour news cycle. We live in the age of social media. There are silly stories. There are fake news stories out there. And then there are just plain, really, really stupid stories out there that still get legs because people have absolutely nothing better to do. Our regular listeners will know that on Monday, Jim, our crazy martini was blasting Newsweek for referring to the Family Research Council as a hate group and for treating Dennis Hastert as just a former Speaker of the House rather than remembering that he's a child molester. Well, now Newsweek is feeding into one of the dumbest internet conspiracy theories for a long time. Hat tip to Hot Air and Ala Pundit over there for reporting on this. He says this idiocy has been percolating online for fully 5 days now, if you can believe it. Then he quotes Newsweek. Critics have zeroed in on footage from Friday of the First Lady, Melania Trump, standing beside her husband, President Donald Trump, while he was addressing the media about hurricane relief for Puerto Rico and a nuclear deal with Iran. In the video, the president calls out his wife at the press conference, which conspiracy theorists claim is his effort to cover for the fact that his wife is in fact somewhere else. Quote, my wife Melania, who happens to be right here, he says. Social media users are studying the image of Melania Trump from the video where she is wearing a coat and sunglasses and are questioning the shape of the First Lady's nose. Since users first posted the footage, Google searchers such as Melania Trump Double and Fake Melania have spiked online. 30,000 retweets and counting for this guy named @JoeVargas, who says this is not Melania. To think they would go this far and try to make us think it's her on TV is mind-blowing. Makes me wonder what else is a lie. Back to Ala Pundit. Her nose looks odd because of the way the bridge of her sunglasses is contoured, but that's about as far as evidence of foul play goes. It's not often you get a dopey internet conspiracy that could be debunked with literally one photo, and then they show another photo from the exact same interaction with reporters where Melania doesn't have the sunglasses on, and lo and behold, it's Melania. So Jim, people need a lot more to do, apparently, and I would imagine it's pretty hard to find a double for Melania Trump.
So, Greg, you're saying that is the real Melania, huh? You thought we had fun earlier in the week with the congresswoman who claimed to have been abducted by aliens. Let me tell you, Greg, I do not believe that is the real Melania Trump. And here's why. I think the Trump administration has secretly completed the most amazing breakthrough in scientific history, human cloning, right? How do we know for certain that it's been the same Melania in any of her public appearances? Prove that to me, huh? All right? They could have a whole assembly line of Melanias coming out one after another. And once this gets unveiled to the world, people will agree that indeed he has made America great again. Because, you know, many, many men would probably love to have their own Melania Trump. How do you like to be Sarah Huckabee Sanders saying, no, that is not it's not a clone. It's not an evil twin. It's not a good twin. It's not a robot replicant. It's not not a Terminator, not a Cylon, not an alien shapeshifter, not a hologram. Not trying to think of any other sci-fi explanation when you encounter someone who's not really. And I love that, like, you know, about really Newsweek, really, this is what you've got to, you know, if you want to get into like, oh, here's this hot new rumor going around. You know about the lizard people, right? I mean, every time there's a video and the signal gets a little bit garbled and then the picture freezes or something and it doesn't look, there's kind of a pixelated look to the opinion. Most people say, oh, that's a technical error. But many people on the internet believe that's evidence of the lizard people. That's what the lizard people look like. They look like pixelated, and that's why. So for a split second, their mask as human slips. And that's what explained it. Now, maybe it's possible the lizard people figured out how to clone Melania. And that's how they replaced. The really frightening thing is like the previous presidency, we had the, Obama was born in Kenya, conspiracy theory and all that. So you have to believe that he was born there, but somehow because they knew he was going to be president of the United States, they had to ship him over from Kenya to Hawaii. They had to get the fake hospital notice. They had to get the fake. Obviously, all the birth certificates had to be faked. And then they had to get the fake birth notice in the newspaper. They had an enormous, elaborate effort to keep this going through, knowing that he had to keep his eligibility for the president 30-some years down the road. Or 40 some years down the road as a possibility. But I like with this, that one I used to say, no. There was an Obama, was born in Hawaii, but they cloned him in Kenya and he was replaced at some point, and the real Obama is trapped somewhere. And you would say that to the people who are the birthers and they would kind of like quite nod. Because you're taking the conspiracy off in a very different direction. Maybe they, because now you've turned Obama from the malevolent entity perpetuating the hoax and the lie to now kind of a victim here, but they couldn't totally dispel it. The idea that, maybe he, you know, given the option, I prefer to clone Melania than Barack Obama. I look forward to the revelations of what we can do with cloning technology today. And I salute that anonymous guy on the internet for being the first to notice and blow the lid off the largest conspiracy in human history. Well done, sir.
Oh, man. You think Trump wouldn't have tweeted about that if he had figured that out?
Melania's been really nice to me lately. What's going on?
She's even holding my hand. Yeah. Oh, man. Well, this is just an example of the wonderful fun we have, most often in the Crazy Martini, but really every day here in the Three Martini Lunch. And Jim, I'm happy to report that today is the 7th anniversary of the premiere of the Three Martini Lunch. We debuted on October 19th, 2010. We had fantastic news that day about improving poll numbers for Republican Senate candidates. And our Crazy Martini that day was the rent is too damn high guy who ran for governor of New York. Didn't win. Lost to Andrew Cuomo, sadly. I think the other guy would have been better. But, you know, over 7 years, you think about some of the great moments, and I know we've played this one a couple times in the past, but just classic. This was last summer, after the horrific tragedy, actually, at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, and we found out that the FBI had interviewed the shooter on two different occasions and decided there was no reason to pursue anything legally on that front. And just as we were getting exasperated with that, there was news that Disney had contacted the FBI and said this guy and his wife were casing the park and were worried about what he might have in mind. And the FBI decided that wasn't even worth a follow-up, which led to this exchange about what might be the best way to deter terrorism at Disney World.
What do they have to do to get rounded up? Right? I mean, like, you know, just what is that threshold? Because in this case, this guy never tripped that threshold. And as a result of it, you know, close to 50 people are dead.
you got me thinking when you mentioned what Stephen Miller said, that Mickey Mouse is doing more than the FBI to protect us. As the father, and we've mentioned this before, of a three-year-old and a one-year-old, that would be the greatest episode of Mickey Mouse Clubhouse ever.
Oh, hands where I can see him. Oh.
Hey, kids, you want to help us catch terrorists? Let's check out our mouse tools. We're going to have a stun gun.
I'm picturing like Disney's 24. Copy that. Oh, I don't have time to explain. I will shoot your wife in the knee if you don't tell me where the bomb is.
Goofy's doing enhanced interrogation techniques. And...
hope you like water.
See, there's our good martini, Greg.
Ah, and a fourth martini or a champagne toast today. Jim, 7 years, it flies right by.
It does. And every once in a while, I will have people say, so what do you guys do? And apparently this is not a good segment to use as your introductory invitation to the three martini lunch, because I've heard a couple of listeners that is like, that is the weirdest, creepiest, and most twisted idea I've ever seen. So not for people, if you're trying to say, oh, you should listen to this podcast, please emphasize, we don't imagine Goofy waterboarding terrorists or Mickey Mouse shooting people in a knee during an interrogation every day. We bring that out for special occasions like the anniversary.
Oh, but if there was Disney CTU, and who knows, if they can clandestinely clone Melania, who knows what they can do with Disney CTU. There's got to be a frustrated bureaucrat when Mickey goes rogue, and that has to be Donald. He's got to be the guy like throwing stuff in his office.
I won't do the voice there. I'll just leave it to listeners' imaginations.
Well, Jim, happy anniversary to you. It's a pleasure to do every day, and we look forward to many, many more years of this.
I do as well, Greg. Thank you for everything you do. I just kind of show up and talk. You do all the putting it together and making sure it sounds just right. So thanks to you and everybody else over at Radio America, and hope everyone has enjoyed it and continues to enjoy it.
Absolutely. Thanks for listening. The audience is what makes us able to keep doing it. So thanks for your loyal listenership. And so thanks for being with us today. Please be with us tomorrow for the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. And in the meantime, please check out our good friends over at Dollar Shave Club. And for just $5, get that starter set for your shave and your hygiene items. DollarShaveClub.com/martini.